Chapter 3. Says I, blushing again, I'm sorry, and I take back what I said, and confess. I raced a little with a comet one day, only just the least little bit, only the tiniest lit, so, says he, and without any sugar in his voice to speak of. I went on, and says, but I only fell off just a bare point, and I went right back on my course again the minute the race was over. No matter that divergence has made all this trouble. It has brought you to a gate that is billions of leagues from the right one. If you had gone to your own gate, they would have known all about your world at once, and there would have been no delay. But we will try to accommodate you. He turned to an underclerk and says, what system is Jupiter in? I don't remember, sir, but I think there is such a planet in one of the little new systems away out in one of the thinly worlded corners of the universe. I will see. He got a balloon and sailed up and up and up, in front of a map that was as big as Rhode Island. He went on up till he was out of sight, and by he came down, and got something to eat and went up again. To cut a long story short, he kept on doing this for a day or two, and finally he came down and said he thought he had found that solar system, but it might be fly specks. So he got a microscope and went back. It turned out better than he feared. He had rousted out our system, sure enough. He got me to describe our planet, and its distance from the sun, and then he says to his chief, oh, I know the one he means now, sir. It is on the map. It is called the Wart. Says I to myself, young man, it wouldn't be wholesome for you to go down there and call it the Wart. Well, they let me in then, and told me I was safe forever, and wouldn't have any more trouble. Then they turned from me, and went on with their work, the same as if they considered my case all complete and shipshape. I was a good deal surprised at this, but I was diffident about speaking up and reminding them. I did so hate to do it, you know. It seemed a pity to bother them, they had so much on their hands. Twice I thought I would give up, and let the thing go, so twice I started to leave, but immediately I thought what a figure I should cut stepping out amongst the redeemed in such a rig, and that made me hang back, and come to anchor again. People got to eying me clerks, you know, wondering why I didn't get underway. I couldn't stand this long, it was too uncomfortable. So at last I plucked up courage, and tipped the head clerk a signal. He says, what, you here yet? What's wanting? Says I, in a low voice and very confidential, making a trumpet with my hands at his ear, I beg pardon, and you mustn't mind my reminding you, and seeming to meddle, but ain't you forgot something? He studied a second, and says, forgot something? ... no, not that I know of. Think, says I, he thought. Then he says, no, I can't seem to have forgot anything. What is it? Look at me, says I, look me all over. He done it. Well? Says he. Well, says I, you don't notice anything? If I branched out amongst the elect looking like this, wouldn't I attract considerable attention? Wouldn't I be a little conspicuous? Well, he says, I don't see anything the matter. What do you lack? Lack? Why, I lack my harp, and my wreath, and my halo, and my hymn book, and my palm branch. I lack everything that a body naturally requires up here, my friend. Puzzled? Peters, he was the worst puzzled man you ever saw. Finally he says, well, you seem to be a curiosity every way a body takes you. I never heard of these things before. I looked at the man a while in solid astonishment. Then I says, now, I hope you don't take it as an offense, for I don't mean any, but really, for a man that has been in the kingdom as long as I reckon you have, you do seem to know powerful little about its customs. Its customs, says he. Even as a large place, good friend. Large empires have many and diverse customs. Even small dominions have, as you doubtless know by what you have seen of the matter on a small scale in the Wart. How can you imagine I could ever learn the varied customs of the countless kingdoms of heaven? It makes my head ache to think of it. I know the customs that prevail in those portions inhabited by peoples that are appointed to enter by my own gate and our key. That is quite enough knowledge for one individual to try to pack into his head in the 37 millions of years I have devoted night and day to that study. But the idea of learning the customs of the whole appalling expanse of heaven, oh man, how insanely you talk. Now I don't doubt that this odd costume you talk about is the fashion in that district of heaven you belong to, but you won't be conspicuous in this section without it. I felt all right, if that was the case, so I bade him good day and left. All day I walked towards the far end of a prodigious hall of the office, hoping to come out into heaven any moment, but it was a mistake. That hall was built on the general heavenly plan, it naturally couldn't be small. At last I got so tired I couldn't go any farther, so I sat down to rest, and begun to tackle the queerest sort of strangers, and ask for information, but I didn't get any. They couldn't understand my language, and I could not understand theirs. I got dreadfully lonesome. I was so down-hearted, and homesick I wished 100 times I never had died. I turned back, of course. About noon next day, I got back at last, and was on hand at the booking office once more. Says I to the head clerk, I begin to see that a man's got to be in his own heaven to be happy. Perfectly correct, says he. Did you imagine the same heaven would suit all sorts of men? Well, I had that idea, but I see the foolishness of it. Which way am I to go to get to my district? He called the under clerk that had examined the map, and he gave me general directions. I thanked him and started, but he says, wait a minute, it is millions of leagues from here. Go outside and stand on that red wishing carpet. Shut your eyes, hold your breath, and wish yourself there. I'm much obliged, says I. Why didn't you dart me through when I first arrived? We have a good deal to think of here. It was your place to think of it, and ask for it. Goodbye, we probably shan't see you in this region for 1,000 centuries or so. In that case, au revoir, says I hopped onto the carpet, and held my breath, and shut my eyes and wished I was in the booking office of my own section. The very next instant a voice I knew sung out in a business kind of a way, a harp and a hymn book, pair of wings and a halo, size 13, for Captain L.I. Stormfield, of San Francisco. Make him out a clean bill of health, and let him in. I opened my eyes. Sure enough, it was a P.I.U. engine I used to know in Tulare County. Mighty good fellow I remembered, being at his funeral, which consisted of him being burnt, and the other engines gumming their faces with his ashes and howling like wildcats. He was powerful glad to see me, and you may make up your mind I was just as glad to see him, and feel that I was in the right kind of a heaven at last. Just as far as ear I could reach, there were swarms of clerks, running and bustling around, tricking out thousands of Yanks and Mexicans and English and Arabs, and all sorts of people in their new outfits. And when they gave me my kit, and I put on my halo, and took a look in the glass, I could have jumped over a house for joy, I was so happy. Oh, this is something like, says one. Oh, says I, I'm all right, show me a cloud. Inside of 15 minutes I was a mile on my way towards the cloud-banks, and about 1 million people along with me. Most of us tried to fly, but some got crippled, and nobody made a success of it. So we concluded to walk, for the present, till we had had some wing practice. We begun to meet swarms of folks who were coming back. Some had harps and nothing else. Some had hymn books and nothing else. Some had nothing at all. All of them looked meek and uncomfortable. One young fellow hadn't anything left but his halo, and he was carrying that in his hand. All of a sudden he offered it to me, and says, will you hold it for me a minute? Then he disappeared in the crowd. I went on. A woman asked me to hold her palm branch, and then she disappeared. A girl got me to hold her harp for her, and by George, she disappeared. And so on, till I was about loaded down to the guards. Then comes a smiling old gentleman and asked me to hold his things. I swabbed off the perspiration and says, "Pretty tart, I'll have to get you to excuse me, my friend, I ain't no at-dash rack." About this time I begun to run across piles of those traps, lying in the road. I just quietly dumped my extra cargo along with them. I looked around, and, Peters, that whole nation that was following me were loaded down the same as I'd been. The return crowd had got them to hold their things a minute, you see. They all dumped their loads too, and we went on. When I found myself perched on a cloud, with a million other people, I never felt so good in my life. Says I, "Now this is according to the promises. I've been having my doubts, but now I am in heaven, sure enough." I gave my palm branch a wave or two, for luck, and then I tautened up my harp strings and struck in. Well, Peters, you can't imagine anything like the row we made. It was grand to listen to, and made a body thrill all over, but there was considerable many tunes going on at once, and that was a drawback to the harmony, you understand. And then there was a lot of Injun tribes, and they kept up such another war whooping, that they kind of took the tuck out of the music. By and by I quit performing, and judged I'd take a rest. There was quite a nice mild old gentleman sitting next me, and I noticed he didn't take a hand. I encouraged him, but he said he was naturally bashful, and was afraid to try before so many people. By and by the old gentleman said he never could seem to enjoy music somehow. The fact was, I was beginning to feel the same way, but I didn't say anything. Him and I had a considerable long silence then, but of course it weren't noticeable in that place. After about 16 or 17 hours, during which I played and sung a little, now and then always the same tune, because I didn't know any other, I laid down my harp, and begun to fan myself with my palm branch. Then we both got to sighing pretty regular. Finally, says he, "Don't you know any tune, but the one you've been pegging it all day?" "Not another blessed one," says I. "Don't you reckon you could learn another one?" Says he. "Never," says I. "I've tried to, but I couldn't manage it. It's a long time to hang to the one eternity, you know." "Don't break my heart," says I. "I'm getting low-spirited enough already." After another long silence, says he, "Are you glad to be here?" Says I, "Old man, I'll be frank with you. This ain't just as near my idea of bliss as I thought it was going to be when I used to go to church." Says he, "What do you say to knocking off and calling it half a day?" "That's me," says one. Never wanted to get off watch so bad in my life. So we started. Millions were coming to the cloud bank all the time, happy and hassanning. Millions were leaving it all the time, looking mighty quiet, I tell you. We laid for the newcomers, and pretty soon I got them to hold all my things a minute, and then I was a free man again, and most outrageously happy. Just then I ran across old Sam Bartlett, who had been dead a long time, and stopped to have a talk with him. Says I, "Now tell me, is this to go on forever? Ain't there anything else for a change?" Says he, "I'll set you right on that point very quick. People take the figurative language of the Bible and the allegories for literal, and the first thing they ask for when they get here is a halo and a harp, and so on. Nothing that's harmless and reasonable is refused a body here, if he asks it in the right spirit. So they are outfitted with these things without a word. They go and sing, and play just about one day, and that's the last you'll ever see them in the choir. They don't need anybody to tell them that that sort of thing wouldn't make a heaven, at least not a heaven that a sane man could stand a week and remain sane. That cloud bank is placed where the noise can't disturb the old inhabitants, and so there ain't any harm in letting everybody get up there and cure himself as soon as he comes. Now you just remember this, heaven is as blissful and lovely as it can be, but it's just the busiest place you ever heard of. There ain't any idle people here after the first day. Singing hymns and waving palm branches through all eternity is pretty when you hear about it in the pulpit, but it's as poor a way to put invaluable. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.